You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we have Scott Pask, who is a set designer for multiple Broadway shows such as Waitress, Mean Girls, The Band's Visit, Something Rotten, Finding Neverland, Book of Mormon, Hair, Pippin, and so many more. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mason. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Really good. Really good to be here today.
So how did you get to where you are working on such high-profile Broadway shows?
God, that's it's a journey. It's definitely a journey. I mean, it kind of starts, I think, with finding the path and finding what you love. And I'm actually here in Tucson during this whole pandemic. And I grew up in Yuma, and I wasn't exposed to a lot of theater. Yuma is a small town, the southern tip of Arizona. And I loved houses, and I studied architecture when I came here. And it was studying architecture where I really discovered that I was really interested in the quality and the feeling of interior space and actually emotional content and storytelling. And it was here where I was most exposed to theater, because I didn't see much of it when I was a kid. And I would see the Tony Awards and think, oh my God, that's incredible. These people have this hobby. Like, when do they do it? Like, is she a dentist? Is he a doctor? And she's a teacher, and you know, whatever. And this is what they do at night. How do they do that? And it was only later, which sounds sort of kind of naive, but it was only later that I figured out that was a profession and a career. And I was always fascinated by the Tony Awards. And then my parents would go and see some touring shows off in San Diego or Phoenix, and was always fascinated just looking through the programs. And especially when I would see the Tony Awards and would see the costume sketches back in the day, when they would show the artists and the lighting designers, and they would, you know, show these incredible production photographs and then the set design models and sketches. And that was all so fascinating. And so when I got here, loved my degree, my architecture education, and I ended up pursuing some electives and some studies in the School of Theater here. And both colleges really kind of collaborated to let me do that, because my architecture degree was a 5-year program, and it was pretty rigid with what was what I was studying, and likewise the prerequisites in the theater school. But they saw that I was a good model maker and that I was really serious about it. And so when I got through that, through my studies here, I really decided that I wanted to pursue that, and I wanted to study with Ming Cho Lee. And I'm really kind of answering that question by telling you sort of about a pathway, as opposed to like, well, how did I get there? Because how you get there is sort of, there are moments of discovery, I think, that happen all the way along. And I think it's important that you listen to your instincts and follow your passions and the things that make you happy. And I've been really lucky to have a lot of great people and educators and friends, and that, you know, have really kind of urged me to, you know, keep following your dreams. And I always drew. I drew as young as I can remember. And those things that make you happy, and you start kind of weaving them together. And for me, it was space, storytelling, drawing, and then just the live experience of theater. They all came together to be this, I don't know, end of the rainbow for me in a way. And so I studied and got my master's at Yale under Ming Cho Lee, Jane Greenwood, Jennifer Tipton, Jess Goldstein, Steve Strawbridge, these brilliant, brilliant educators. And brilliant artists in their field. And then was lucky. It's just like one foot in front of the other. I was very lucky to meet when I was in between my second and third year. I was assisting a designer in New York who I was working in independent film when I got to New York. I was an art director, and I was an art director and set decorator. And I kind of left that because my dream was really theater. And I love them both. And I felt like architecture, film, television, and then theater, it's all kind of this sphere. You just kind of, for me, it was like they all satisfied different like aspects of the passion that I have for storytelling and spatial design. And I worked with this designer, and on an opera that I was assisting her on, the director's assistant was Diane Paulus. And Diane was in the master's program at Columbia. And then we got to be friends. And so when we both graduated from school, we ended up doing Fringe, like when the Fringe just started, some projects together. And one of those was the Donkey Show. And the Donkey Show we did at the Piano Store down in Lower East Side. I mean, we did it for a dollar and a dream. And it became this really big hit there. And then it was picked up and we did an off-Broadway version of it. And we took that show to a few different places. And somewhere along the line, that was where I remember getting a phone call. And I did a little bit of assisting as well. And I worked on a show called The Mineola Twins that I co-designed. And the thing just started kind of coming together. And when I got a call about doing a show called Urine Town, and I think they'd seen the work that I'd done because it was very installation and immersive theater for the Donkey Show, and they wanted an approach to Urine Town for that play, or that musical actually. And I'd just been doing a few off-Broadway projects and just kind of, you know, one project to the next. And I was lucky in that I had a little apartment. I didn't have a ton of overhead, so I could choose those projects carefully. And then Urine Town happened, and Urine Town was a huge hit off Broadway. And then we got great reviews, and then we were going to transfer to Broadway. And so that was my first Broadway show. And we were in previews when 9/11 happened. And we were supposed to open on September 12th, 2001. And when that happened, I'm sure a lot of us felt like, oh my God, what is going to happen? I mean, not only to just New York, but to like everybody in there in that city and life in general, and how was it going to change? And it was, I think, through the fortitude of the citizens of New York and the leadership at that time and everybody kind of banding together and saying, you know, we're not going to like let the city fall apart because of this horrible act. And, you know, within a few weeks, we were open and people were going to restaurants and supporting sporting events and supporting local retailers. It was this big kind of banding together to kind of get people into supporting the local community. And so this is a sort of rambling answer to the question, but Urine Town was a big step for me. And then from there, other shows followed. And I guess hope they like what they saw. And then that led to another project. But I've been very lucky, and I love what I do, and I work hard at it, and I hope I'm a great collaborator, because I think that's probably the most important part of it.
What are some of the aspects of set design that people don't notice?
Yeah, set design, sometimes a lot of it is a little, behind the curtain sort of thing. I think a lot of people don't know the process that it takes to do a set design, and, you know, it starts with, first of all, is that phone call from the director, the producer, and then the script or the description of the dance or an opera or whatever that project will be. I think that process can be a long one, and the investigation, a lot of research. I love research. And even if the set ends up being a complete departure from that research, I think having information that it will influence something, even if it's a small hand prop. I think a lot of things that go unnoticed are the degree of detail and props on stage and hand props and everything that's chosen. Like I'm responsible for that as well. If it's not a costume prop, but most like everything that, you know, someone will touch. And that's why I sort of love interiors and things like that. So that's something that I think very often goes unnoticed. And I think that also, you know, every seat in the theater has been considered. You know, sometimes people will like, you're off on the far extremes, left and right. And we know that those seats are all tiered and, you know, hopefully responded to in the matrix of sales. But I've studied that proscenium and what each of those views are very specifically. So it's a very intended view for the audience. And another thing, like automation and moving pieces, you notice them when they're loud, but people really don't notice them when they're seamless. And I think the best, you know, the engineers and the people that work with us so often are so brilliant. And And when they do their job so brilliantly, it's almost unnoticed. You know, something glides on. It's only when, oh gosh, the piece of scenery stopped on stage last night at blah, 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 whatever show, and everybody, like, it goes all over the web. And, you know, it's, that stuff is kind of exciting. And that's the point of previews, working that all out. But that's when people kind of really get a little, a moment of like, oh wow, there's a lot of complex moving pieces in this piece, if it's something like that. Other times it's, you know, it's each moment is each live show is different from the next. And I think that's the beauty of live performance.
So when you first get the script or a job offer and read through it, how do you find ways to design that show?
I think it really depends on what the piece is first. Is it a play? Is it a musical? And where is the production starting? And or for what theater or stage or space? But it all starts with like a conversation. It starts with dialogue with the director, the producer, that sort of community of creators. And then it grows sort of wider as we envelop and unfold the other creative team members. But yeah, it's really, and like depending on what it is, if it's a revival of a play, you know, that script has been around or that play has been around, and it's like, what's the approach to that? Like what's illuminating about doing that particular play or musical today? If it's a revival, like we're seeing it through a lens that's different than the lens was when it was written or first produced. So there are a lot of questions, a lot of factors that go into how do you design a piece of material.
How do you decide if a show will be realistic or more of an imaginative structure?
Again, I think that's jumping off of the last one. That's a conversation with like a director. It can be like the dialogue can just be as, you know, quick as like a phone call and some random thoughts that we're tossing around. But I think that, you know, the piece has been chosen for a reason. And so there's a passion behind that choice. And there's very often, most often, a sort of an approach or a point of view about that piece. Very quickly, you kind of hone in on what you want to illuminate about that story. And I think if it is something that requires or is maybe better told in a sort of unrealistic or unnaturalistic way, you can figure that out, I think, pretty quickly, and then start, you know, playing around with the direction and how do you apply the sort of less naturalistic approach to it. And then there are also some play, like I would say, like, you know, a revival of a play, sometimes it wants to be done very naturalistically, and because like the approach is not to illuminate it or put it into a kind of a different context. Sometimes it's just simply redoing, like doing that play with another point of view about that narrative, but that narrative approach may not involve completely upending a physical environment. It totally depends on the directorial approach and what the team kind of feels is best for the production that we're kind of walking into.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So, when you are first thinking about a show, do you incorporate lighting, sound, projection ideas, or do you work around those later?
I think they enter into the picture pretty quickly. Lighting is always really important to me. I mean, the specifics of it may come along later, but definitely it is something that I consider hugely important to my work, because it's through the lens of the lighting designer how my work is really seen. You know, color is affected by the light, like darkness, lightness, like all of that is really like how my work is viewed by the audience. So that becomes a really important collaboration to me. And I love working closely with lighting designers. And I think that's projection. Sometimes if that's an approach, I'm working on a project now where from day one, that's been a very big consideration. So he's been on the journey with us in that, on that project from early days. I mean, I want to get a few sketches down and a little bit of an approach. And then we find the time when that folding in of that artist is best. And I think it's great when people are involved early. I think the collaborative imagination is always such a sort of rewarding process, and to have be all of us thinking on the same lines, and we always will kind of come up with something, you know, interesting, creative. And it's also just great to be in that sort of what I call the kind of sandbox and just pushing ideas around, and I enjoy that so much. So and I find it very rewarding.
What's the best advice you've gotten so far?
God, one of them is, like, I have a professor here who was really important in my architectural education, and he specializes in interior design. I remember being here, and early on, he just said, you know, you should think about a semester somewhere else. And I chose to study in Italy. And they hadn't done that from the College of Architecture, so I went with Syracuse to, I applied to go in their program to Florence. And so I studied there for a semester. And so I think getting out and seeing the world and building up, at least for me, building up my visual vocabulary of history and art history has been so important. And learning about art and artists and their process of achievement and has been super illuminating. I also think that's something I said earlier. It's like, if you are doing what you love, you'll be happy. And I think that's something that you kind of always have to be reminding yourself. And I mean, I love what I do so much, and it doesn't mean sometimes there are tough days or, you know, a long rehearsal or something like that. That's natural, but I feel so lucky to be doing it. And I mean, during this, you know, this pandemic, I feel so bereft by not having the work that I love around me at all times, and those friends and collaborators that that we're, you know, constantly lucky to be making art and theater. And I think getting back to that, I'm so hopeful that we'll get there soon. And I really hope that you know, happens, because I'm really anxious to get back to it. I'm fumbling because it has been a tough time. I'm not going to lie. It's when you do something you love so much, it isn't a job. It's a passion. It's kind of, I've built my life around the work that I love and the people that I love doing it with, and I'm lucky to be doing it with. And so I hope that that's a driving force for everybody in what they do. And if you're one of those lucky few people who does love what you do and you feel like you found your calling, I think that's really important.
Do you think you have benefited more from education or experience in your path to becoming a set designer?
I think both, for sure. I think the structure of education and being able to be in a context like at the university here, University of Arizona here in Tucson, having the proximity of the architecture school, and it was through that that I discovered theater, really, because I mean, the Fine Arts College was like across the way, and the proximity of those programs was really helpful to me in higher education, and just learning about what's available to you as a, you know, even potential career path, because I didn't know all that much. And being an architect is certainly, and I still love it. I mean, I do work like that for myself and sometimes for others, but I am fascinated by all the possibility. And I think that education is really, really important. And then experience, they work together really, really well. And for me, like, education, travel, then finding finding your way. I remember I got a really early internship on a film, and I was like a draftsman. And so I would work on drafting locations and travel with the art director and when the film was happening. And that was sort of my first step into that, that medium. And then from there, it's just a sort of organic process. I ended up being at an event with some friends, and a production designer was there. She said, "Oh my God, I heard you're working on this film." And so I interviewed with her, and she hired me to be an art director on a film that she was doing. And it was that process that I ended up working with her for a number of years before I went back to get my graduate degree. And then on one of those films, I met a costume designer who had studied with the artist that I wanted to study with at grad school. And so it was helpful to get points of view and insight and input and advice from people. And it's always helpful to get, even my friends in theater and the theater community are constant sources of inspiration and advice and everything. And especially now, I think we all are leaning on each other through this time. And I think without them, I think we all see each other as a really tightly knit, lucky family. And, you know, right now it's a hard time for us all. And we're all kind of holding each other through this in a way, virtually. But I think it's a measure of both. I loved my education. I loved the architecture degree that I got here at the U of A. I loved my time at the Yale School of Drama, studying with Ming and Michael Jurgen and in the set design department. I loved that. And it was also, I loved that I'd been able to work. I'd gone to grad school. I'd been in New York working for about 4 to 5 years, I think. And I was already kind of in the art direction, discipline in film and getting work and was busy. So it was taking a break from that, because it was the advice of someone else to say, if you don't do this now and pursue those theater dreams, when do you think you'll do that? And I said, I should reflect on that a little more intensely. And so I did. And that helped me make that decision to take a break, go to Yale, move to New Haven. And so I did that for 3 years. And that was such a rewarding time to be doing that and then to come back into New York after that.
So the big question is, what are you doing during quarantine?
Yeah, I look around because I just looked outside. I have a home here in Tucson. It's been a place that I've loved since I went to school here. So I've had this home for about 9 years, going up on 10. And so early on, I was in the early previews for a production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf that I was doing with directed by Joe Mantello. Scott Rudin producing, starring Laurie Metcalf, Rupert Everett, Russell Tovey, and that was it was something I was so intensely proud of, and I really it was an intense period of time because you're working very hard on a project, and I was getting ready to go back into a production of American Buffalo that was going to follow once we got those previews locked for Virginia Woolf. I was moving over to work and on American Buffalo with Sam Rockwell, Lawrence Fishburne, and Darren Criss. And so it was a very intense period. And then this happened. And I had left theater because I wasn't feeling great at the very beginning. And didn't want to be in the room if I even had a sniffle, because I think we were all very sensitive to that. And so I was out with a sort of not feeling 100%. And then theaters closed and all of that. Turned out there was someone in our staff in the theater that had the virus and was very quickly handled. And then we had our last performance on a Wednesday. And I guess that would have been the 12th. I have a twin brother, and my twin the fluke was like, why don't I go tonight? And I was like, I always feel so protective of previews. I'm like, it's a little too early. And but I said, why don't you go? I'm here, you'll represent, and it'll be great. And he's like, he is just friends with so many people in the production, and he's a designer himself as well, and a fashion director at Bergdorf Goodman and Neiman Marcus National. So he's got great taste and great style. And I always love his it's very important for his point of view on my work, and I want to hear his honest thoughts. And so he was able to see it, and it turned out being to be the last show of Virginia Woolf. And he was blown away and just loved it. And then that was the last night. And so I'm rambling because it was such an abrupt end to a very intense period of time prepping that show. And it's a great example of a play that we did not do 100% naturalistically. It's very, very important that George and Martha and their guests are in a home that is believably a home, but ours took a surrealistic kind of deconstruction after you establish what you think you're going to be sitting in that space the whole evening. There are basically three acts. And in between the first and the second, we started deconstructing things. So things went away. There was an atrium that left. There was a stone fireplace that was gone. There were books that were missing and you started seeing. And then there was a space that got magically sort of deeper. So it just started like focusing in on these people. And by the end, there's a quick curtain down between act two and act three. And when that went out, you came back and everything was gone. There was this enormous bookcase that stretched across the whole span of the theater. It was something like 80 feet long and it had gone out. There was a ceiling that had gone away and it was just like you were left with this big, basically a black box with a duplicate of the door upstage and these three sconces and then the staircase. And the staircase had moved all the way upstage. So what it did, it gave you this precinct with the furniture and just the sort of life and the fight that had happened and just that evening and the detritus of that evening was kind of left there in very stark relief. And then the very last moment, Laurie walks up the staircase and then the marriage continues. So I'm going into detail about a very specific project about what I'm doing during COVID is like, I'm lamenting the loss of so much art at this point and at this time, and not only the show that was very dear to me, but so many others. I know that Six was the musical, it was their opening night and they didn't have it because it closed, the decision was made to close theaters on that day. So what I've been doing since then is I came out here. And so that was a very abrupt departure to once we got the all clear that we were going to have 3 weeks, which we thought we were going to have was 3 weeks of a break. I came out here to kind of regroup. And then that obviously has been extended. So I've been here and I've been drawing and I've been working on projects that are in development. So I have an incredible team and a fantastic woman who's worked with me for almost 20 years, and she and I are in touch daily. And we've been working on two projects pretty intensely, and we're moving on to a couple of others because they've reached different benchmarks in the development. So little by little, we've been kind of working on these projects with, you know, the dream in our eye to them, you know, opening hopefully sometime in early to mid 2021. And so I've been drawing. I do love drawing, and I've storyboarded a lot on one of these shows in particular. So keeping my hand, I guess, practiced and busy is a good thing. And I love drawing, so I try to keep on top of that. And that's a good thing. But also being out at this house and being amidst this landscape and the desert and all of that, it has been a kind of sanctuary for me right now. And so that's been really nice. And to be in contact and communication with the people in my world and within my work, and then to have my friends and the kind of a chosen family that's here nearby for support and just to be together here and there in our socially distanced ways has been really great. But yeah, so I've been out in Arizona and taking care of this place and keeping an eye to the future and drawing. And you got a very rambling introduction to Virginia Woolf, but it was something that I'm so proud of. And I hope someday that we get to do it again. And I totally forgot. Patsy Farron plays Honey, and she is a total genius. Russell and Patsy are both actors from England, and Russell's a pal. And it was just such an incredible group of performances. And I'm gutted that the world only got to see, I think it was like nine, I think we had 8 or 9 previews. But so I guess that goes on into legend now. But and there are museum shows and gallery exhibitions and music performances and so many other things, fundraisers and so many things like that. That we've been doing theater for millennia, and I hold steady to the sort of hope and faith that this won't be interrupted for long in the scheme of things. We have to get back to the idea of communal art and gathering of people. It's just something that we just have to find a way back. I hope that's an answer to that question.
Before we go, do you have anything you want to add?
Oh, wow. I think I just rambled my way through that whole thing. do I want to add anything? I mean, I think it's just like, at this time, I think people are so reflective. And I hope for you as you enter high school and you clearly are passionate about what you love. And it's like, keep that passion, because that's what's going to keep you moving ahead and keeping you looking forward to doing the work that you want to do and what's gratifying to you. And I think that it's also get out there and vote. You can't yet, but tell your older friends and your parents that, you know, we have to take charge of this. We have to take control and we have to vote and use our voice to make this change. This has to change. We have to have leadership that can lead us in the right direction. That's an incredibly important thing. Other things to add, it's like follow your passions and like stay close to your friends. They're going to, it's like, these are the times where your friends and your family, there's nothing else like that to, that support and that strength is what will get us all through any like adverse moments and these challenges. But also let's keep our hope alive and research thing, like find movies that you're loving and look at theater online and find things that keep you inspired. Look at museums that are starting to put out some online exhibitions and virtual gallery work. I think just keeping vigilant about your curiosity is always important. That's probably the biggest thing. I think be vigilant about your curiosity and that will always be a great guiding force.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of this.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.